So today, I would like to start by talking about the Megillah. Megillas Esther has many interesting parts to the story, many things that we could focus on. What I would like to focus on right now are the opening lines. Specifically, we have the first line, which really doesn't say much, except it tells us that the story takes place in the days of Ahasuerus. However, the description, I'll read the Hebrew and I'll translate it into English. It was in the days of Ahasuerus. This is the Ahasuerus Hamolech Mehodu Vad Kush. This is the Ahasuerus who reigns from Hodu to Kush. Sheva ve'esrim u'meya medina, 127 provinces. Why does it have to say this? So it would seem on a very basic level that we all understand that the name Ahasuerus is a Hebraization of a Persian name, which is best transliterated as Artaxashta, which is translated very unusually into English as Artaxerxes. There were a number of them. There was Artaxerxes the first and the second and the third and the fourth. And we want to know which one it's talking about. So apparently the Megillah is saying that there was only one who reigned over 127 provinces. So if you want to know which Ahasuerus it is, it's the Ahasuerus who was the ruler of 127 provinces. However, the next line adds some details. Bayomim ha'im kesheves ha'melech Ahasuerus al kisei malchuso asher b'shushan habira. In these days, when King Ahasuerus sat on the throne of his kingdom, which was in Shushan, the capital. So we have two pieces of information here. The first one is in the first line that Ahasuerus is called Hamolech, the one who rules. The usual word in Hebrew, whenever you want to describe a king, and it is the word which would continue to appear in the Megillah many, many times, is Hamelech. Melech is the noun for king. Molech is not a noun. Molech is a verb. And not only that, it's a present tense verb. The king who is kinging. The king who is reigning. And he has a capital city in Shushan. Now, what do we know about this? We know the information that's provided. However, now that we are reading this a couple of thousand years later, 2,500 years later, about, we don't understand the full political details here. However, one thing that we understand very clearly is that 127 provinces is a lot of provinces. And according to the simple meaning, which the Gemara debates, but I'll leave it as the simple meaning for now, it's a very large area. If you think that Hodu is what is today India, and Kush is what is today Ethiopia, then you realize that you have an empire that stretches all the way from India and the entire Middle East, and going into Africa as far south as Ethiopia, then you realize that the area that this empire covers is huge. Why does this matter? So now let's go to the next pasuk. Bishnas shalosh lemalcho, also mishtelcho sarav avadav, chel poros umodai hapartamim besorei hamedinos lefanav. In year 3 of his reign, he made a huge party for all of his ministers and all of his servants and all of his army, the entire troop of Paras and Modai, which is Persia and Media, and all of the ministers of all of these provinces. So the question here that we have to ask, and with this, this is the introduction to today's class, is that you have to realize how unusual it is for somebody to make a big party in the 3rd year of his reign. If you wanted to tell me he made a huge inauguration party, then the inauguration would be somewhere in the 1st year of his reign. To tell me that a party occurred in the 3rd year of his reign should raise some sort of flag. If you're not thinking critically, then you think, okay, so he threw a party in the 3rd year of his reign. But we're starting by telling us that there's this king. This king throws a party, and it's in the 3rd year. This should beg the question, why does he have this party? What has happened in the third year of his reign to justify this party? I think the answer is, and most children know this when they learn the little bits about the Megillah, and everyone who comes to Shul to hear the Megillah will realize this as well, that the answer is found in a later pasuk, in this same first chapter, when it describes the vessels that Ahasuerus used for his party. We describe Ahashkos bechlei zahav, vechelim mikelim shonim. Drinking was done out of gold vessels and many different types of vessels. But those words, vekelim mikelim shonim, means different kinds of vessels, and it's done in the music of Tisha B'Av, of Megillas Eicha. So why is it done in the tune of Tisha B'Av, of Megillas Eicha, the Book of Lamentations? So we all know the answer. It's because Ahasuerus didn't just use gold cups, he used cups of the Beis HaMikdash. Aha! So if he used cups of the Beis HaMikdash, then this means, the way that the rabbis understand this, and the way that it's in the Medrash, that the third year of his reign means nothing as a standalone fact. It's the third year of his reign, whenever that is. But we know that there's a Jewish context to it being the third year of his reign. What is the Jewish context? The third year of the reign of Ahasuerus over 127 provinces of the Empire of Persia was the end of the 70th year since the Golus began. And since, follow this now, since the prophet Yirmiyahu Hanavi, and also Daniel, had prophesied that the Golus would last 70 years, Jews were expecting the 70 years to end with a return to Yerushalayim. The 70th year came and went, and the Jews did not return to Yerushalayim. And this is why Ahasuerus threw the party. So the party was not just a party to have fun in the obnoxiously wealthy style of the old British Empire. Rather, this party was about the final defeat of the Jewish dream. This 70th year spelled the end of the Jewish problem the way that Ahasuerus saw it. And this gives us the context to this of the whole Megillah, right? We know the expression, I'll tell you the whole Megillah, means the full story with its full context. Well, the full story with its full context means that this story is being told to us to tell us that the Jews were at this point the lowest they had ever been. I will conclude this thought by sharing with you what the Rambam says about the mitzvah of matanos le'evyonim, giving money to the poor. The Rambam writes in the very last halacha of Hilchos Megillah, so this is the conclusion of chapter 2 of the laws of Megillah, the Rambam writes, Mutav la'adam laharbos b'matanos evyonim milaharbos b'sudaso u'bishloach manos l'reyav. It is better for a person to give more gifts to the poor than he does into his suda and to sending shalach manos to his friends. So why is it better? So the Rambam says, She'ein sham simcha gedola umufawara ela l'sameach lev aniyim v'yesomim v'almanos v'geirim. Because there is no greater joy, there is no more beautiful joy than to gladden the heart of the poor and the orphans and the widows and the strangers. Shehamisameach lev ha'umlolim, for the person who makes the heart of depressed, sad, rejected people happy, ha'elu, that we mentioned, doma l'shechina, is like the Shechina, meaning like the divine presence. Shenemar, as it says, ulahachayos ruach shvalim, L'achayos lev nitkayim, that what God does is he revives the spirit of the downtrodden and he revives the heart of the oppressed. And then there's one more halacha after that. But this one, halacha Yud Zayin, halacha 17, is what I'm focusing on. So, what is the point of mentioning this? Why is this considered a value? I understand tzedakah is a wonderful thing. But the Rambam is not saying, listen, give more to the Matanos Levyonim than you give to Shalach Manos, because tzedakah is a high priority in Judaism. He's not saying that. He's saying that is the greater simcha, meaning there's a mitzvah simcha on Purim, so there's a greater simcha to give to the poor and to the oppressed and to the downtrodden. And that is why you should give. But it's not only about the poor. And this is a very important point. Because the groups of people that the Rambam lists are not people who are merely poor. They're people who feel down on their luck. People whose hearts, whose souls are crushed. And that is the theme of Purim that we infer from those few opening lines of the Megillah. The Jewish people at this time were crushed, and this is essentially what the Rambam is hinting to us. He's saying, helping make these people get happy, not providing for their needs because they're starving, but making them happy is what the Shekhinah does. It's what God himself does. And he brings a pasuk to show that God uplifts the spirit of the downtrodden and revives the heart of the crushed. Because that is what Hashem did to us on Purim. But how do you know that the Jewish people were crushed? So you say, well, Haman wanted to kill all of them. But the beginning of the Megillah is telling us the reason the Jews felt crushed was not merely because Haman wanted to kill them. That's a story that comes in the next chapter and the chapter after that. The reason the Jews were crushed was because they felt there was no hope for Klal Yisrael, that the future of Klal Yisrael was doomed. But the way they felt, as those 70 years concluded, it wasn't just that they said, you know, we're in Golus, times are rough. It's like somebody had just made an official announcement to them that Mashiach wasn't going to come anymore. And that was an unbearable thought. Now, we now, with hindsight, know that there was a mistake in the calculation, as there always is. And the mistake in the calculation was that the 7 years was from the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, not the beginning of the exile, which had taken place over a decade earlier. But they didn't know that then. They thought the project of the Jewish people was now a failure. And people who feel so helpless and hopeless, to help them and to encourage them, even though at the end of the Megillah, the Jewish people were not released from Golus. They weren't. They were still Avdei Achashverosh. However, Hashem gave them that hope, gave them simcha, the simcha of realizing that the story was not over. The story would not conclude the way that they thought it would, but the story would not over, and ultimately, yes, the Geula would happen. They would have to wait another few years for them to be able to return to Yerushalayim and complete the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash. But even now, at this point in the story, meaning after we have read the Megillah, we know that there is hope. And the way to understand this is by understanding what those opening lines at the beginning of the Megillah mean. That's all for now. I hope to continue tomorrow. Take care, everybody.